We live in a fast-paced and hectic world where it's easy to feel overwhelmed, stressed, and out of control. How do you manage all the competing pressures without losing sense of yourself? How do you stay focused enough to not only plot a path, but follow it? Welcome to Master Your Life, a show that offers inspiration, insight, and intelligence, as well as success stories from many walks of life that can show you how you can control your own destiny. Our knowledgeable and entertaining host and her guests give practical advice that you can use every day in the quest to master your life. Now, here's your host, Leah Mattinson.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's show. I'm host Leah Mattinson, and thank you, first of all, to everyone who's joining us from wherever it is you are on this beautiful planet today. And thank you for sharing the podcast far and wide with your friends and family, for people who are trying to get back their health and well-being. This is the place to be. So make sure that you, if you're listening to the video or the audio version of this, come on over to watch the video version at masteryourlife.ca. So not .com, make sure you come to the .ca. And then you can watch my wonderful guest and I talking about today's hot topic, which is winning streaks. So Dr. Yes. David Hardy is joining me on today's show. Dr. Dave, how are you today?
Oh, fantastic. Absolutely.
And why are you fantastic? What?
Winning for me is beautiful summer days. So right now I'm enjoying life.
Yeah, we're in the thrall of a nice summertime here in Alberta, Canada, where Dr. David Hardy actually is from, and me as well. So Dr. Dave is working out of the Collegiate Sports Center. So anyone who wants to check him out on social media, that's where you can find him. But Dave's specialty is actually functional neurology, and he's very well educated in and has 10,000 hours or more in functional neurology. And what makes functional neurology different than just straight up old chiropractic, Dave?
Basically, the knowledge of the nervous system. So we spend a lot of time knowing these pathways, learning them, and then we're able to kind of distinguish what parts of the nervous system aren't functioning well, and then match that up with a stimulation exercise modality to make a change. So we dive in and geek out about the nervous system a little bit more and farther, and are able to hone our therapies on what's going on with the brain, and the magic happens from there.
Yeah, and I love it because it's like the brain is the seat of the soul in my mind. It's like the brain is kind of the, you know, chugging along the thing that houses all the decision making and problem, like all of that. And so when you've got a misfunctional brain or a dysfunctional brain or a high functioning brain, you can see that in your day to day things that you achieve or don't achieve in your life. And so when you know that you can actually do some things to fix it, or that you might be doing some things to harm it.
Right.
You can do something about it, maybe. And so it's not just about willpower. It's also about this. How do you actually figure out what's going on in this between your ears? Because it does matter what's going on between your ears.
Yeah.
So, yes. Go ahead.
Oh, I've got a, basically what I was going to dive into right there was that patients being told that they've reached their maximum level of return after an injury. Mm. And you keep hearing that, okay, well, if you haven't gotten better after this time period, then this is the best you can expect. And I had a brain injury patient in this week, and I told him flat out, I'm like, there is basically this spectrum or continuum from pathology up to peak performance. So peak performance is going to be like your high level business people, your academics, your high top musicianists, your artists, your athletes, and they're all striving to make like millisecond changes in their nervous system and how quick it fires or how accurate it is. And then all the way down to pathology, where you're trying to get some function back and better timing, better control. But there is no end to it. Like, you can basically continue to make these small incremental gains to the level that you're searching for. And that's the exciting thing, is that it is basically, yeah, everything from things are starting to fall apart and not work properly, all the way up to this high performance aspect with brain function. And then that becomes really exciting to people because you don't have to be told that this is it. There's always little gains you can make.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think too, that once you figure out what your losing streak is or what you're losing on, then you can actually build the tools and the resources and the skills to actually have that winning streak, like turn the losing streak around to be a winning streak. And that's kind of the constant thing that we're doing when we're trying to master our life, right? Is like, how do I actually how do I first of all notice that things aren't right, though, is kind of where that pivot point starts, where you go, things aren't right here. Is there a time when people actually don't have the ability to do that? Are there times when people don't have the ability to actually look at themselves and self-assess?
Yeah, I think in burnout especially is that we're so focused on the circumstances around us that when we're getting close to burnout or we're in that process that we just don't realize it because we're so much in that fight mode and trying to control all these circumstances being thrown at us. And really we're damaging ourselves at the same time. So it takes a lot of skill and unfortunately experience to realize when you're going through burnout and kind of where in that midst you are. And it is just one of those things. Stress really, really takes a toll on our body and our brain and nervous system.
So what are some of the signs or symptoms or behaviors connected to burnout?
Yeah, burnout is basically the accumulation of all that stress that's happened for way too long. And yeah, decreased energy levels is going to be one, more soreness, being sick more often, basically just being tired and fed up, irritable and frustrated.
So does that sound like any of you? Tired, frustrated. You know, Dave, do you ever, is the burnout thing ever connected with poor moral behavior? Like where people are making bad decisions. So around lying or telling the truth, avoiding things that are going on in their life. Like, do you see those sorts of things creeping up in clients?
Definitely. And I think, yeah, the more we're stressed out, the more poor decisions we make. And we can call it a poor morality. But the thing is, our morals are best when we're functioning at our best. Mm-hmm. And when things aren't functioning well or going our way, then taking little shortcuts or little cheats here and there to kind of gain back something becomes more and more kind of available to people to take when they're in these situations. Mm-hmm. And saw one Instagram quote, and this is just how messed up the entrepreneurial world sometimes is. The clickbait was that you never see a druggie say, "I don't have enough money today. I'm not gonna go out and get drugs."
Ever.
and then the entrepreneurial claim was, "Don't let a junkie out hustle you." I'm just like,
we're laughing. Yeah. That is bad, but yes.
This is the messed up world of entrepreneurship and everything else, that everything comes down to hustle and doing everything imaginable to start to get ahead instead of trying to find that flow in something sustainable.
Right. Yes. And entrepreneurship, I think, is often like parenting or building a family. Because right, it's the most entrepreneurial thing that you'll do. So listen, tune in, tune your ears to this episode, because it is not just for entrepreneurs, but anyone who's trying to be a business manager in their life. So whether you're managing your own behavior or you're trying to help others in your family, if that's your offspring or grandchildren, and if you're managing business people like your the leader of an organization. But entrepreneurs are different than, it's like this, a little bit different than business owners or small, like small business owners or large business owners or corporate managers. So the distinction's important too. So what do you see as different between entrepreneurs and like regular business dudes who are going into work as CEOs? And
I think one is that an entrepreneur has to create and build something, whereas a business kind of regular business person is going to be there to maintain things and to try to keep the ship going. And there seems to be more pressure kind of in the business world from higher ups down, and mm-hmm. that's where you feel it. And then of course, trying to increase or maintain profits in a business that of course those don't fluctuate that much mm-hmm. and don't change as easily. And then of course the management of a lot of different people. And whereas an entrepreneur is maybe building that team, trying to create that cash flow and income and everything else and create it. And so there's different mechanisms behind it, but at the end of the day, if there's a lot of stress and everything else, you come down to the same factors that are really taking its toll on society.
Yes. Yeah. Individuals and society. And it's more now than ever, I think, that we've talked about before, that people are leaving en masse kind of the corporate world and they're taking on entrepreneurial roles. And so there's all this lack of experience where people go, ooh, this is like a scary, weird new thing, getting into the entrepreneurial hat. And then, right. And everyone, I guess, is apparently trying to out hustle their local drug dealer. So this is that's another problem. So where's the upside in all this then? It's like, what can people do to be the best entrepreneurs that they can be, or the best family managers that they can be, from your perspective, Dave?
Yeah, well, it is an exciting period of time, I guess, right now, because so many industries are getting disrupted. But with that becomes the stress of, oh my God, now what do I do type thing? And people, of course, have gone through the boredom, the stress, and being disengaged from corporate life. And yeah, to become somebody who starts to create and build something off your own ideas becomes very exciting. But with that comes all the roadblocks and the challenges that come with building something. Mm-hmm. And it is a different level of stress, because yeah, you're going out and you're hitting a lot of dead ends that you need to then readjust and figure another way around it. And so the initial stage in entrepreneurship, of course, is this huge euphoria of, yes, I'm going to create something big. And then, yeah, you get in the trenches and realize it's not as easy as your first vision was. And you're going to be knocked down a few times, to say the least.
Yeah. It's a hard journey. Definitely. It's a difficult journey. So if you're surrounding yourself with people who are not understanding that journey and not able to support in whatever way, how does that affect somebody who is looking for, like, what's the deficit if you don't have good mentors, or even the opposite, if you have people in your life who are working against you? Because yeah, that happens.
Big time. Absolutely, it does. And it's going to happen. It's part of that hazing process out there, I guess, is that, yeah, you're going to be alone for a good chunk of time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what people have to realize, is that you really need to build yourself up. And I always like the quote or the saying that you need to be your biggest fan, but you need to cheer for yourself more than you cheer for your sports team. Mm-hmm. And because not many other people, when you're in the trenches, are going to be cheering for you. So it becomes cliche, but at the same time, that's reality with it, is that in this world, it's the first initial stages definitely are more about yourself and building yourself which I believe is building your brain and nervous system to be as efficient as possible, so that you're able to then go into the mental and mindset activities that you're going to need as well. So, the initial stage I would say is the stress management and building your own brain and nervous system so that it is firing and as sharp as possible. Because with that increased stress, you're definitely going to see periods of time where it doesn't function well. And then you have to be aware of, okay, well, how do I heal it and get myself back into the game?
And I think people are understanding that more and more and more as they get educated about just like that it's not just your willpower. You know, I remember when I was quite young, it's like, oh, you can willpower yourself through everything. And I go, like, why are some people failing though? Like, because they seem like they're great people.
Yes.
Like, they don't actually have any, like, they don't seem like they're bad people. They don't seem like they're intentionally trying to be total, I can't say some of the words, but really bad, you know, right. But, or whatever, like it, they wake up every day with sort of their noble cause and their calling and they're trying to champion through things, but why are they failing? That's so weird because they say, like, as an executive coach, I would get lots of the, you know, people coming and going, this is what we want. This is what we want for ourselves. This is what we want for our organization. This is what we want for our family. And then as soon as they walked out of the office door, they'd be doing exactly the opposite thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of what was going to lead them to the thing. And I go, can that actually be willpower? Because we just talked through all of what they needed to do and they didn't have, you know, the willpower to do that. That just seems so weird. Like, look at all the things that they've done in their life that are really successful.
Yes.
Like they finished this, they did that, they've got this. And then now they're not able to execute on this thing. That just seems weird to me. Like, so then as the understanding of the brain, you know, started coming out a bit more that the brain's really in charge. There's like lots of thoughts coming through all the time that you have to be able to filter and choose. And that isn't about your willpower. It's really about this neurological function and maybe how they're paired with one another, that healthy neurology and your spirit, the fighting spirit.
Right.
The fighting spirit can't exist if the neurology is right off in the weeds. So what kinds of things cause people to have neurology that is not helpful? Like stress is one, but what other things do that?
Right. Yeah. I think I just want to expand on what you said, because it was so on point, is this willpower stuff and this conscious excitement about what's going on, or when talking and communicating with someone, we're in our conscious brain and we're processing things consciously. But then when we go to do things, we're going into habit parts of our brain, the unconscious centers. And especially if we're making a transition, that part of the brain is so used and trained with doing the same things over and over again and functioning in that old way of doing things. And now you've got to develop new habits. And that usually is unconscious. So that comes from a lot of experience and from doing things. And that becomes exciting is, from my aspect, is that we can hack that part of the brain a lot better. Mm-hmm. And there's books now on habit. There's The Power of Habit or Atomic Habits. And in The Power of Habit, the author goes into basically a story of this one individual who had this pathology that wiped out his ability to form new memories. Mm-hmm. So those circuits in his brain were toast and destroyed. So he'd wake up and he'd have the same conversations over and over again. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, he would wander off and people ask him, well, what did he do? Okay, do you remember making that coffee and doing the same breakfast routine things over and over again? And he'd have no clue about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd also be able to wander around the neighborhood, have conversations with people and function kind of normally in that realm. But if you'd ask him about it, he'd have no clue. And if you asked him where he was going to go or how he planned to get around these different roads and different routes, he'd have no idea. And this just goes into so much of our brain is unconscious. And these are the sensory areas, these sensory processing areas that I find exciting, because we can stimulate these different pathways. And then if we do that at the same time as the mindset and everything else, I think we're going to be able to shoot some people in the right direction a lot quicker and faster. Yeah.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah. And that's what your program, the Hardy Brain, is all about, right? It's kind of that, well, part of it anyway. And neurons that fire together, wire together is true. And maybe it's more than two neurons that are firing and wiring, or activities firing and wiring, right? And exponentially helping. So was there improvements in that person's story in the book? I haven't read it. So
No, it continues on. That's basically how his existence was, is that he was functioning from this unconscious mind over and over again, and old memories, and unable to consciously put down new memories. And the other example I use is what's called cortical blindness. So in cortical blindness, there's nothing wrong with the actual vision coming in through the eyes and going back. The problem is our conscious area where we perceive vision is once again damaged and not working. So these people believe that they can't see, but so much of vision also hits our unconscious centers. So these people are walking around, and you can put a chair in front of them and they'll move around the chair and navigate a room, but they have no awareness that they're actually doing this, because that conscious side of the brain is not functioning. But the unconscious part of the brain that's actually perceiving objects and relating that to movement and everything else is actually working.
So what in the world causes that? What kinds
of- once again, damage to a specific part of the brain versus kind of that global one. So, but all of these start to give us an idea too about just how much on autopilot our brains are. And kind of the key with the conscious brain is being able to select kind of these old patterns that we've already learned and developed, and then apply it to different situations. So that becomes kind of that exciting thing about the visualization and mindset, is that you're able to kind of take these chunks of old patterns and old habits and combine them into new formats, basically, so that we go out and do a different task. And the more we can build these subconscious parts of the brain so that they're firing sharper and crisper, then the better this should happen.
So does people's vision actually return from doing these kinds of exercises, or?
Not so much. Basically, in the examples I use, that part of the brain's being destroyed or damaged and not working. But on kind of a different example, I use that senses kind of become dulled with how our brains are declining or are injured or inflamed or everything else. And my example that I've talked about before was that when I started doing these silly little exercises, that and doing them every single hour. On day three, it was like a light switch flipped in my brain and I felt this wave of calm hit me that I had never felt before. And then my vision went crisper, clearer, and brighter. So yeah, senses can become sharper and honed better if it, once again, is more that processing part of the brain and that you're returning it into a better state of firing more efficiently.
Right. So would this be an example of that? Last weekend, I was out and just was riding my bike and decided to actually count the leaves on a tree in the distance as I was riding towards it. And so, and then went from one tree on the right-hand side and swept across to the trees on the left-hand side. So then counting trees and then sweeping across again and counting fence posts on the right-hand side. And so I was kind of doing this sweeping back and forth and counting things in the distance and then up closer. Do those kinds of things rewire your brain? I felt better. I felt really good. I was like, oh, this feels good. And I can feel things calming down. I don't even think lots of times you realize how much stress your body is under until you start to feel not stressed.
That's a big one. Absolutely. And you're combining two different things there. You've got the physical action of riding the bike and then sweeping and looking at different parts of your environment. So you're activating your system as you do that. And then consciously, you were doing a task at the same time. And that task was to count things. So yeah, you've got both kind of these primitive parts of the brain doing centers, doing that task, and then also cognitively. And you have those two in sync. And when you get those two in sync is kind of where that flow state happens as well.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I felt stronger too. So there was like really interesting, all of the nervous system things that changed just as a result of really being conscious about that, looking out in the distance, because I was doing that consciously because I thought my eyesight seems to not be improving very much. And I've been spending too much time in front of the computer. And yes. So it was, again, it's this, the readjustments all the time of my own physical health. But it comes as a result of noticing, first of all, when something's at a deficit. So I feel like I'm losing ability, and then I'll do stuff to try to create that winning streak in, you know, kind of that we start. It's like, oh, first of all, you have to acknowledge that you got a problem with your eyes. So my mom, who sees me frequently, says, oh, it's like every time I look at you, put your glasses on because you're frowning all the time and you're going to start looking old like me. I'm like, oh. No, my mom's beautiful. I'm totally kidding. It's just, but really, she's saying that for my benefit so that I'm conscious that I'm working really hard to read things. Right. So it's like, what do you do about that? Do you continue to fight that? Or do you acknowledge, wow, you're working really hard to read things and how can you correct it? And can you? And the answer is yeah, yes, you can do some things to help vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, vision too. So much of it we think of as being acuity. So like we both have glasses because the lens is in a different shape. And sometimes we get the glasses earlier and in life, mm-hmm. and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing. And basically that's going to be the lens and how the lens directs light into the back of the eye. A lot of kind of what we've been talking about though, is how to actually improve how the brain perceives that information and how the brain uses it. So that becomes kind of that dulling effect or that brightening effect that happens when we have a sharper brain. And then we can do the same with taste. Like your taste can start to get dull and hazy as well. You just don't taste your food as well. But then maybe you start to do some things that kind of decrease the inflammation that's going to kind of take away from these receptors and the processing in the brain. And then you start to really concentrate on the aroma of food first, and you start to really hone in on the different subtle flavors in that food. And you start to build this awareness more and more. And all of a sudden the food starts to taste richer and better. And even just talking about that, I start to stimulate the saliva glands in my mouth, and I want to go grab a gourmet dinner.
And that's important because the gourmet dinner actually is better for your gastrointestinal tract typically. And so it's a very, when you're savoring and reveling in those, the experience, and you can do it visually. So you don't even need to really go, like, just by visualizing those things. So you don't even need to go to your favorite restaurant. You're already there halfway anyway. Right? It's like,
And the visualization is that process where our conscious centers are firing down and prepping our unconscious centers for something. Mm-hmm. And even just thinking about exercising, there's studies out there that you'll start to increase your strength. And some are like up to like 10% strength increase just by perceiving and visualizing actually exercising. Which becomes exciting because then you can become 10% stronger without actually doing it. Mm-hmm. But another way to look at it is you only become 10% stronger if you don't do it.
Right. Yes. So the limiting factor
aspect of it is this great prep system to get these neurons close to exciting even more before the activity of doing it. And it develops that connection and it gets things going and it makes then the exercise more efficient. So if you take athletes who have really honed in on this and they use the visualization before going out and doing their skill. So they're prepping their system, their nervous system to fire these muscles and move these joints in different directions and be more efficient with it. And then when they do it, then of course they've got that other 90% of the equation kind of going on for them. And then it's just repetition, keep practicing it, keep visualizing it. And now even more so focusing on recovery so that you rebuild these pathways even better. And then also the feedback loops of little tweaks and improvements. So it really is this game between that visualization, that doing, and then that reflection that's key to building this momentum and making these wins and gains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The yin and yang of things. Yeah. The going hard and then relaxing and allowing. A lot of times we spend so much of our energy just on the yang that it burns out the yin. But what about the opposite? I think people are very familiar with that. But what about the opposite? What about when people are really not able to get up any momentum to execute on the things that they want in their life? You know, lots of people lay in bed all night long worrying about or thinking about, you know, I wish I had a better job. I wish my relationship was better. My kids are a mess. But then they don't sleep at night. And then they wake up in the morning with the same problems they went to bed with. So that's kind of,
I'm going to use a physical analogy here for everyone for this one. So what I want you to do is I want you to take your arm and I want you to flex your bicep really hard and get that muscle really tight. Now, if you held it in that position for a long, long time, what would happen to that muscle?
It would stay in a knot. It would knot up.
Right. It would become this big, painful knot and just being this spastic, horrible, tense posture all the time, right? So what would be the way to get out of that? It would be to extend the arm and use the opposite muscle. So with our thoughts, basically what we're doing is we're clenching them so tight and focusing on that one aspect when chances are what we need to do is we need to extend things in the opposite direction to start to make that change instead. Mm-hmm. And that physical example, I think, really kind of fortifies it with people when it comes to kind of that rigid thinking as well. Because everything basically with the brain and nervous system is about movement anyway. So let's use a physical example.
Right.
But our thoughts become rigid in one direction and clenched and spastic and tight and sore. And the thing we need to do is extend in the opposite direction. And that's tough because we're stuck in that position, right?
It is tough. Yes. And maybe we need to show ourselves that we can do it, though, through the physical extension, because that also definitely relates to relationships.
Big time.
Get in such a knot about whatever it is. And then, yes, if we could just figure out how to extend or work in the opposite direction or work on something else, the relationship can improve pretty quickly, pretty fast.
Yeah. And there's all sorts of different talks on basically how you change your posture, then you can change your thinking as well. Mm-hmm. And what you're doing is you're using those unconscious, basically movement centers and everything else, which then changes feelings, which then changes thoughts. So it is going kind of that bottom up approach with the brain, so that then you can go top down with it.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And I'm going to do a shameless shout out for sort of how we draw attention to our body too, because this is important. I use a stand-up desk all the time for my work. And so my posture is good most of the time. And I'm pretty conscious of it because I'm standing. And if I decided at some moment during this interview to not stand, I would fall down. And then that would be very bad for the show. Dave would be concerned. It's like, look, Leah just forgot to stand up. But it keeps me conscious, right? Because I can feel my feet are on the floor there. I can feel what position they're in. I can feel how my pelvic floor is sitting, or my pelvis is tilted or not tilted. I can feel when my back starts to get sore. And so I need to readjust my posture with all these little micro movements throughout the entire time that we're on doing podcasts. And so when you do several interviews, you know, day after day after day at a stand-up desk, you're building this structure, and anybody can do that, right? So it's anyone can do that, unless you're missing a leg, in which case, if you've got a prosthetic, you can still do it. Because there's always that one person listening that goes, I can't do it because, okay, you're the one exception to all of this stuff. But most people can figure out how to stand up and in our, and over longer periods of time. So drawing attention to our physical body is kind of the start of remedying a lot of things, whether it's a physical problem or a mental problem or a business problem or a relationship problem. So can you speak a little bit about what are things that you do, Dave, or you encourage people to become aware of the physical body, to become that like sensory aware of what's going on in your physical body?
A lot of what you just mentioned, I think is key too. And then when we start talking about stress and burnout, is the body's already processing it and doing it. So of course, when we're stressed out, what happens to our shoulder, head and neck is we become in that kind of rolled over posture. Our shoulders
go caveman posture, caveman. Yeah.
And we have this scowl on our face, our jaw starts to clench and hurt. So that example with the bicep also works now with the jaw. Mm-hmm. Like how many people have jaw tension and pain? So if you think about keeping your bicep flexed for way too long, what that happens, all right, put your fingers on basically the muscles of the jaw near the top of the jaw and just feel how tight those guys are. Yeah. All right. So that's from clenching, being upset and stressed out and doing too much. So what's the opposite then? It's to open up, bring that jaw back. And you start to notice that the cheeks go up.
I look about 20 years younger there. Thanks, Dr. Dave.
It actually goes back. And then you feel better and there's a smile on your face. Mm-hmm. But if people just told you to smile, you'd go back to clenching.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's think about the opposite. So what's getting us in that horrible, clenched, burnt out, painful, sore state? And then do the opposite. And sometimes it's just these small little postural and muscle things that start to then fire into other systems. And one thing leads to another. And you got this positive cascade happening instead of the negative decline.
Yeah. And so I'll do the little shout out I want to share to people who are interested is to come to the masteryourlife.ca website and check out Holden Qigong. And yes. I'm specifically directing you to that because the reason I can stand all day, people go, come on, you don't stand all day. Isn't that bad for you? I'm like, no, because I actually see myself as a piece of bamboo in the wind. And when you're bamboo in the wind, that's a Qigong thing, then you can actually stand and you're constantly doing these micro movements. So you're not in yang energy. You're in yin. You're actually kind of balanced between the yin and the yang in that state. So everyone can go and check that out at Holden Qigong, which is on the masteryourlife.ca website, because it's very empowering to be able to feel into your body and to go, what's actually going on here that I could improve my own health and well-being. And wellness starts within. And the only way that you can do that is identifying when things are not well. And so that's part of the practice, is drawing attention to what's not well. So come check that out. Holden Qigong. I want to shift gears just slightly, but staying on the same subject, because one of the things about brain health that just recently came out is this Alzheimer's study that a lot of that many, many years ago was widely accepted. Almost 100% of the focus on Alzheimer's research for the past, I think it's either 13 or 16 years. Maybe you can speak to that, Dr. David. You know, people have been counting on this one piece of research to inform them on all other research going forward on Alzheimer's. And so, like, how are we fixing the brain? How do we treat these plaques? And now it's come out that the study was falsified. So,
yes.
So, can you imagine? Can you, like, really, can you imagine that? It's affecting millions of people. It's cost trillions of dollars, I'm sure, all this research.
And it's led things down the wrong path, mm-hmm. is one of the big things that has come out of this, is that the protein getting laid down is not the cause. It's more of one of the mechanisms that's occurring at the same time in this degeneration. But it goes into this right now, this is basically the example of everything we've talked about wrapped into one thing, is that, you've got basically, we went into entrepreneurs, business people, what's happening with stress and decreased morality. And then now we also have the examples of, okay, this decreased morality under the stress and pressure. And it's actually kind of very coincidental that we're talking about brain decline at the same point as this, is because that's what the research was on.
Yes.
And it was cited in roughly about 2,300 other papers. And you take one study that's kind of being posted as being the pinnacle study, and then you've got all this down cascade of other people using that research and that data and quoting it and basing their research off it and going in the wrong direction.
Let's talk about this a little bit, a little deeper, because what was actually falsified was the pictures, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I want you guys to just think about that. Like, how many pictures do you look at in a day, and do you have the visual acuity to actually notice when something isn't true? You know, like, I'm this, and this is just rolling out right now, because I'm thinking all of the stuff on social media that's got filters on it now that you go, honestly, is that person even really look like that? Like somebody sent me a picture of them with a bunny filter on her, you know, and then their face is all smoothed out and all these crazy filters. And I thought, like, what are you doing? Like, you don't even like eyelash filters and the like filters of everything. So people's actual ability to, well, number one, be actually authentic and natural about like, what are you for real? This, I think a lot of it does stem from the acceptance that it's okay to falsify stuff. It's okay to be false about things and mm-hmm. to purvey this false stuff at all levels. So it, and maybe people think that's too global of thinking, but that's a, 60,000 foot executive coach view, is that all of these things do permeate our culture and what we accept as the truth. And so those images, that's so huge when people really get that it was the images that were messed with.
Yeah.
And that's what you're, when you look at an Alzheimer's picture, when you look at Huntington's disease, like the brain in Huntington's disease, if you ever like type that in and take a look at the actual MRI, it's very specific about what's been destroyed. You can see the caudate nuclei is gone in the person with Huntington's. So when I looked at that Alzheimer's one, I went, huh, really? Well, how can I believe the pictures that I'm seeing in this? Or why would I believe the pictures I'm seeing in these other things? So there's this very deep effect of what you believe is true, and the foundation of all those things that you thought were true because somebody who you trusted showed you some things, mm-hmm. some evidence, right? So it's very
it's that breaking down of morality that happens with all human beings. And this is no different. Stress, pressure, of course, people are going to look for those little cheats or everything else. And it also goes into basically how we shouldn't be worshiping research.
Yes.
And that is such a hard thing to get out there right now with our society, is that research has its flaws. Mm-hmm. And the biggest one is in biology. If you think that A plus B equals C, you're completely oblivious to what's going on. And this research was basically that this protein causes Alzheimer's type thing. And here's the pictures. And then we can use this medication and we've got a chance to cure it. That is just way too simple. And the thing with research is you're taking thousands of people, thousands of millions of variables, and trying to get it down to one variable for your paper. And then this accumulates in the research. And then there's all sorts of other research that goes along with different variables and everything else. But that is just so limited. And that biology is just so complex and builds on so many different things that if it's, once again, simplified down to that, then, right there, alarm bells should be ringing. And if that was the case, then over all these years, there would have been a cure by now type thing. And it's just not that simple. It goes into basically, okay, well, then we can manufacture one drug and make a profit off it. And we've got to get away from that mindset. And there's three pillars of healthcare. There's research, and it's so important. It's a $1 trillion guidebook, mm-hmm. but it's only a guidebook.
Right. Yes.
And there's holes in it. And there's also morality issues that you can't get around. There was an article in The Atlantic that 2% of researchers will voluntarily admit that they falsified something.
Think about that. Like, holy, what?
Huh? Like, that's insane.
If your house is 2% off when you start to build it, like an inch or like a micro, whatever, it's like the entire thing will fall down.
Yes.
So it's very, it's just so,
And these are the ones that will admit it.
Yes, that, oh, for sure. Yeah. So, you know, it's like the 80-20 rule. It's like Credos. You know,
a lot larger than that. Like, these are people that are under immense pressure for their grants and everything else. You've spent decades of your life trying to achieve something. And if you don't do it, then you don't get to go on.
And you're out of a job. Yeah, that's so right.
Right there, like, oh, of course, it's the right situations to put somebody under the pressure that they do it. Yeah. And yeah, it's insane. And yet we're worshiping it as being the absolute end all and be all. Mm-hmm. Now, the two other pillars are going to be patient preference. So you think about it, how much information patients have nowadays. And in the future, how much more information patients are going to have. So all sorts of wearables, all sorts of devices and labs that you can order yourself. And of course, the wealth of information out there that you can start to develop your own kind of schema of things is increasing all the time. And that's very valuable, not just that, but also the different values and morals people have. And that's underplayed, especially right now. And then the third one is clinician experience. So I kind of stated that the difference between a researcher and a clinician is a researcher is trying to get thousands of variables with thousands of people down to one variable. And a clinician's trying to take one person with thousands of variables and boil it down to one person, the person you're trying to take care of. And it becomes, once again, multiple sources and multiple different things to bring in to hopefully get one person better. And we've ignored that as well.
Mm-hmm. And if that's you, if you're the one person, then you need to tune into the next episode because we're out of time for today. And we should actually talk about these three pillars in more detail if you're willing to come back on, Dr. David Hardy.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So, like, really, really important to be thinking about your individual health and well-being more so now than ever. Dr. Dave, any final words? Where can people find you?
Thehardybrain.ca, also LinkedIn, of course, and Instagram and Facebook. So
right, and remember, it's the .ca, guys. So it's thehardybrain.ca, not .com, and masteryourlife.ca. Really key. So share this with your friends and family. Everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. We invite you to love yourselves, love each other, mind your minds and your brains. That's all for us. Bye for now.
Thank you for being a part of our program today. Master Your Life is a presentation of Leah Mattinson Enterprises, Inc. Join us next time on Master Your Life, helping you to discover the very best of you.